Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
Hey, if you're ready for the live Steve Austin Show podcast with myself and Vince McMahon, then give me a hell yeah.
Austin got McMahon! Austin got McMahon!
You ain't gonna mold me. What you see, Vince, is what you get.
Paralysis has struck! Austin, you will be humbled. I will fire your ass.
I will continue to raise as much hell.
Stone Cold!
And give you more gray hairs every single day of your life. All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show, and welcome to the WWE Network. I'm coming to you from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I'm speaking with my guest, the chairman and CEO of WWE, Vince McMahon. Vince, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
Thanks.
Welcome to your network.
Thanks.
Speaking of network.
Yep.
How's it doing? Right off the bat. We ain't got time to sit down and mess around and get you comfortable.
It's
jump
great.
Into the frying pan. How's the network doing?
It's doing great, thanks. Subscriptions are good. Entertainment, I think, is great. About a 90-some percent satisfaction level on it. So that pretty much tells you, you know, whether or not people like it.
What have been some of the headaches and hassles? I know there's a lot of people over in the UK.
Right.
They send me a lot of emails.
Right.
They're looking for the network. What's the delay on that?
I mean, that's been a start. Stop, start, stop kind of like thing. We hope to have it pretty much settled by the first of the year. That's about all I can say about it right now. I don't want to say anything definite because it's like, oh, okay, then that's the deadline, you
right.
know, but soon.
It's right around the corner.
Yes, I'd say so.
A while back, I got a call from you, and you said, hey, man, we're going to unveil the network. We're going to do this in Las mm-hmm. Vegas. Can you be a part of it? I was down in South Texas, drove my RV, and yep. was a part of it. I was very proud of it. Will this thing ultimately meet your expectations? Because you have high expectations in everything you do.
I do have high expectations.
Right.
And I think it definitely will. It takes a little time. It's a subscription model, much like Netflix. It just takes a little while to build up, you know, all the content you want to build up and make sure you're listening to the audience and give them exactly what they want.
Give them exactly what they want.
I think we're giving them exactly what they want tonight. I mean, I'm on your show.
You're on my show.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about giving them what they want.
Right.
How in tune right now with you, with the WWE Universe? You always like to listen to your crowd. Mm-hmm. Are you giving the crowd what they want? Because I just got finished watching 3 hours of live sports entertainment
right.
/ pro wrestling, where I come
that's
from.
Sports entertainment. That's not where you come from. You know, pro wrestling is, you know, what my dad did. You know, come on.
How did pro wrestling segue into sports entertainment?
I've seen you play the guitar. I've heard you sing.
That was no. under the sports entertainment umbrella.
Of course.
When I got in the ring, I wrestled 20
well,
by
yes,
20 square circle.
Absolutely, did you
and
ever.
We put on a show.
Yeah, you
and
did.
And you take people through highs and lows and you entertain them through a wrestling match.
Absolutely. Telling stories. That's what we do. Verbally, physically in the ring, we're telling stories. The whole night is a story. And hopefully we entertain everyone. Don't always, you know, some of these matches don't always hit. You know that.
Right.
And the audience knows that as well. Some of them really do. I thought that Bray Wyatt tonight, you know, looked pretty damn good. So did Ambrose. I thought the six-man match in the night was really good. I think we started off with a, pretty hot, started out with a bang. So I like tonight's show.
Now, 3 hours of live wrestling. 3 hours of live sports entertainment. You got to help me out here. I run a podcast that's pretty loose.
Right.
Sports entertainment. 3 hours live. How tough is that to do every single week?
No one does that. And again, we're the longest running weekly episodic television show in history. When you think about how many years we've been doing this, and how many shows and 3 hours live, and here in Tulsa, I mean, it's like we're all over the world. And when you come and you're traveling every week, these trucks are on the road every week, this set, we do magic with a lot of help, with a lot of people behind the scenes, make all of this happen. Performers have to be right, whether or not they are hurt or haven't had any sleep or whatever it is, and you know this very well. When you go out in front of that live audience, you've got that adrenaline going and you want to perform to your best extent. And that's what our guys and gals do every week.
Now, I got fired up just watching the show. I like being around the environment. I enjoyed my time, my run here as a WWE superstar.
I guess you did. I did, too.
When I look at the show, I'd like to see more in-ring wrestling action.
Right.
Under the umbrella of sports entertainment.
Sure.
But you've got to run a three-hour show. You've only got so many guys and gals. Am I wrong or in wanting more wrestling? That first segment sometimes, I think, takes a little too long to set the hook.
Sometimes it does. I think in order to care about the match, you have to care about the performers and the storyline that goes into it. Therefore, you have to build up to that. If it's just two guys out there wrestling, and they're just wrestling for wrestling's sake, I don't know their story, so therefore I don't care about the outcome. So I want to know what the outcome is going to be once you have two individuals that are adversaries out there.
Understood. I walk in here to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there's a different vibe in here. And, obviously my heyday was back in the Attitude Era. But there's just a different feel in the locker room. And, there's really no other options, than the WWE out there. Really, when you think about it, to make a living. There's their other, you got TNA and other guys, but I'm talking about the big leagues. This is it.
Sure.
It seems to me guys and gals backstage are walking on eggshells. They're trepidatious. They're a little afraid to really go out on a limb because there is no other option. And if they tick somebody off, well, then, there goes their career.
Well, don't piss anybody off.
I pissed a lot of people off. I had
I know
to.
You have.
I wanted to challenge the locker room.
Well,
go ahead.
This is a different group of guys and gals. It's millennials. They're not as ambitious, quite frankly, and they're not trepidatious at all. I just don't think they necessarily want to reach for that brass ring. The last person who really reached for that brass ring, in all likelihood, was John Cena. Now, there are others coming up now who definitely want to reach for it. Ambrose is one of them. Seth Rollins is another one. Roman Reigns is another one. Bray's another one. So I think you've got some people here who are chomping at the bit to make a difference. But when you're walking around, backstage, you don't hear as much, camaraderie, perhaps, and laughter is in your era.
Shenanigans.
But then again, there's some other things that they do.
But you just said this locker room wasn't as ambitious as the one I was in.
I would suggest that's correct.
Why is that?
It's a different, again, I said it's millennials. It's a different point of view. Well, if you reach for that brass ring and you fall on your butt, no one wants to fail. And there's this feeling that, this insecurity that if you fail, you're exposed.
Right.
So, I think that that's largely pretty much what it is. Because you give everybody the opportunities, you give everyone resources, which you never had. The things that we do now from a television production standpoint, social media, oh my God, social media is huge. It helps talent in so many different ways. It gives them the tools that you didn't have, other people like you did not have. It's a utilization of those tools that's very important for talent to use. And they do use them, but not in the way you did.
I want to sit here right now in front of you and in front of the world on the WWE Network and issue a challenge to the WWE superstars. And I talked to a lot of the guys, John Cena, some of the guys I've known for years, and some of the guys who I just met. And I'm going to issue them a challenge to go out on a limb because I'm sitting here looking you right in the eyes and you're saying, I think you need more superstars. You need more depth on this roster. Agreed?
Agreed.
I mean, and John Cena and every top guy here wants another dance partner. But you got to get up that ladder to be a dance partner.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to go on a limb to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes.
You got to take a chance.
You do indeed.
Okay, I get asked all the time on my show, Steve, tell me how you get to the top in pro wrestling. How do I get to the top in sports entertainment?
Right.
How do I get to just to get into business in general? As a promoter, what are you looking for in a potential WWE superstar?
I'm looking for someone who has charisma, someone who has a great deal of heart, strong work ethic, and some innate skills, and someone who wants to learn as much as they possibly can, which, in fact, we learn every single day. All of us, you know, you did every day. Everyone does. As a promoter, you do. So, I mean, you want someone with those kind of skills, verbal skills, physical skills, you know, and someone who has the passion, you know, for our business. And once you find that, it's simply giving someone those tools to be able to work with and put them in the right environment against the right opponent, and from there you continue to build. First thing you know, you got yourself a star.
A long time ago, you and I were watching a match. We were watching the matches at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. The entrance to Madison Square Garden is very short. It's a blue curtain. It's a cheap-ass blue curtain. It covers, you know, the entrance from the backstage area. And you and I were watching the matches, and a particular guy went out, and he got a pretty damn good pop. Mm-hmm. Got a better pop than he normally did. And we looked at each other and said, hey, man, that's a pretty good pop. And you looked at me, and you said, yeah, I really hope he gets over. And that was a light bulb went off in my head, because I was starting to really gain momentum in Stone Cold, mm-hmm. starting to get hot. And so my point is, you know, as a promoter, that said to me, you don't have a magic wand that you can just make someone be over. Now, you can put the jetpack on someone and put the rocket boosters on them and send them with some forward momentum, but therein lies what they have to bring.
Well, it's the audience, really. I mean, the audience makes or breaks a star. You can put everything you can, all the resources in the world behind someone. If the audience doesn't want that person to be a star, they don't believe in him or her, it's not going to happen.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of cats. I was just talking to Cesaro backstage.
Right.
Guy with a lot of physical skills, mm-hmm. Strong dude, great in-ring work. What's the one piece where he's not connecting?
He's not connecting yet, and we hope he will. I mean, he doesn't quite have the charisma. Doesn't have quite the verbal skills as well. It may be because he's Swiss. I don't know in terms of European style. But those are the big things that he's lacking. The audience needs to care about you. They need to be able to feel your presence. You need to be able to project that in an extraordinary physical talent. Extraordinary.
Right.
But at the moment, and hopefully you'll get it, he lacks it.
You know, but organically, I started to like the cat when they split him up from Swagger and Zeb Coulter, mm-hmm. went off on his own. Kind of, he was doing some impressive things in the ring and started to respect, you know, his ability. Then they put him with Paul Heyman, who I love, but as a heel manager. So then all of a sudden you're saying, hey, now you got to hate this guy because he's guilt by association with Heyman. Then he goes back by himself, mm-hmm. and so he kind of got thrown or lost in the shuffle and lost a little bit of direction. But before he went with Heyman, I just started liking the guy because I started respecting him. And then he kind of lost his momentum. Just from a booking standpoint, what can you do to further his cause?
I'm not certain. I don't have the answer to everything. You
right.
know? I mean, I'm not certain. I listen to a lot of people, a lot of people's advice, and listen to the audience. I'm not so sure that I have that answer. I'm not giving up. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
You know, and he's a great talent, in-ring talent, physically. I just, there's something missing, and, you know, quite frankly, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it exactly to say, okay, now we're going to the dance.
Right. I was backstage, kind of milling around. I see, you know, a lot of guys walking around with pieces of paper. You've got a big writing staff mm-hmm. here, right. you know, for a live television taping. And back in the old days, right. you used to sit by your swimming pool with Pat Patterson, and y'all would book the territory. It was a two-man process. Every now and then, Jim Ross would come by, or mm-hmm. Bruce Prichard, or whoever.
Right.
But basically, it was a couple-man show. And so how did it get so complicated? Did the world of sports entertainment get that much harder when I left? Because when I was here, you know, there was a handful of writers, a couple.
Right.
And you were overseeing them. You kept, you know, those guys in check. They're cranking out some good stuff.
Right.
How did this process get so complicated?
But as you were leaving, the company was growing by leaps and bounds. It went public. And it's a different company today. And things have changed. You have to change with the times. So having a quote, bunch of writers around is crucial, because it's not going to come from one man. You know, no one man has the answers to all this creative stuff. And quite frankly, it's not a one-man show. It grew into this extraordinary organization, you know, with a lot of people, a lot of talent, be the writers or executives or what have you. It's a huge mammoth organization. Now, I can't do it all. When I sat back with Pat Patterson, you know, at the swimming pool, so to speak, which was a blast, and poor Pat, you know, I worked him to the bone.
Right.
But as I do most everybody, me first. But nonetheless, you know, Pat and I would sit there for hours and, you know, and book and write television and things of that nature until someone, you know, walked along, wanted to say hello, or came from the office with a message or something like that. And when that happened, we would normally push them in the pool.
Right.
And it happened to Nick Bockwinkel. It happened to Dusty Rhodes. And the look, you know, quite frankly, and I love pranks, as you know, ribs. And the look on someone's face when you shove them, and they're in the air, and they're saying to themselves, no, this is not happening. I'm not really going in the pool. I'm not really going. And then when they come up and they realize that they're completely, totally wet, watch the whole deal, it is one of the funniest things in the world.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Car waxes have really come a long way. Last year, Meguiar's introduced their hybrid ceramic spray wax. With its bright blue bottle, its advanced SiO2 hybrid technology delivers ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional wax. Incredibly easy to use. Simply wash your car. Spray on Meguiar's hybrid ceramic spray wax, then just rinse off. No rubbing, no curing, buffing, or mess. It provides extreme water-beating action. The product has been flying off the shelves, and this year, knowing some prefer a more traditional style of application, Meguiar's has launched their liquid version, Meguiar's Hybrid Ceramic Liquid Wax. Long-lasting ceramic protection and an easy-to-use wax seals the paint for long-lasting protection against the elements and also delivers extreme water-beating action. Easy to use, applying like a traditional liquid wax with no wax residue. Meguiar's also launched a hybrid ceramic spray detailer for in-between boosted maintenance. Removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, or those pesky bird droppings. Boosts gloss and enhances protection. And it also contains the SiO2 hybrid ceramic protection. Achieve that just wash look by gently removing fresh contaminants between regular washes before they have the chance to bond. Now Meguiar's has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone. For incredible water beating and protection and durability beyond traditional wax. It's ceramic made easy. Meguiar's.
Now, one of the funniest stories that happened on one of these illustrious booking sessions was...
You have to have some fun. Our business is about fun. That's what it's about. So you have to have fun making fun. And we still do.
I know, which leads me to my story.
Okay.
This was at one of these illustrious booking sessions at your swimming pool. You were the guy walking by the swimming pool. Your son, Shane, pushed you into the pool. And as he tells a story, you were suspended above water for almost 5 seconds, it seemed, hang time. And a lot of four-letter words boiled out of your mouth. You turned red, and then you sank in the water.
The story goes that the water then started to boil.
Exactly.
No, that's not really the case, but God, I chased him everywhere. I couldn't wait to get my hands on him, but he drove away. He got away.
What happened to Shane? Where's he at?
Shane is busy. He's doing a number of things. He's busy working in Japan, and he's got his fingers in a lot of pots, and he's a happy camper and enjoying his family.
Why did he decide to get out of the WWE?
It was sort of a mutual feeling. You know, it's a situation whereby he had talent which could take other places. And let's face it, you know, family businesses are very, very difficult. Sometimes, and my wife was one time, as you know, in the business, and Shane, so it's not, we don't all get along all the time. But sometimes, you know, being a son or being a dad, it's difficult in business, you know, and or having your wife working with you. You know, that's not a piece of cake either. So, I mean, you know, you have to do in the end, you know, I try to, and it's my interpretation, to do what's right for business.
Did you want your kids, Shane and Stephanie, to get in the business? Because your father did not want you to get in the business.
No, he did not. I wanted Shane and Stephanie, and of course, Paul's now working with us, and I wanted Shane and Stephanie to do what they wanted to do. And I didn't push them into the business. You know, they both worked, you know, summers during the middle of school and so forth. And Shane worked at a warehouse once we used to do the merchandising and everything, which was a riot. I think it was his second summer, he was working at the merchandise warehouse. And he said, "Dad, I want a raise." "Who are you to ask for a raise? If you can do any better, you know, go someplace else."
Right.
And he found a job working as a laborer, you know, for a brick mission. And he probably doubled his wage. I was proud of him because he left.
He left.
Yep.
Now, you got into business mm-hmm. when your dad, his announcer, wanted a raise. Your dad refused a raise, and y'all were fixed to go on air. He was an announcer.
We were in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, where we used to do television every 3 weeks. That in Allentown, back to back. And it was funny because I wasn't always sitting in my dad's meetings. I mean, I loved to be around my dad. I listened to him. I asked a few questions, you know, not too many to irritate him. But I was a good listener, and I wasn't always privy to his conversations with talent. Normally I wouldn't be, but on this occasion in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, Ray Morgan was the announcer, and his best friend was the president of the AFTRA organization, American Federation of Television Radio Artists. I think it still exists. And Ray wanted a raise. And so we're in Hamburg, Pennsylvania. We're about to go on the air. And Ray says to my dad, "I'm not going out there unless you give me what I want." And my dad had his quarters, used to have a bunch of quarters in his hand. He'd play with the quarters, and he looked at Ray, didn't say anything, and finally said, "I'm not going to give you the raise." Ray got up and walked out. And I'm sitting in this cloakroom, is where this conversation is happening. I'm sitting in this cloakroom, and I'm seeing myself, wow, that was awesome. First of all, I was just proud to be there and listen to all that, and proud of my dad, you know, proud of the fact that he, you know, told this guy to, you know, take off. And then about 2 minutes later, I said, "Dad, what are you going to do now? I mean," and he said,
"Is that the infamous round of quarters?"
The quarters. He looked at me and he says, "You're going to be the announcer." I'd had no experience whatsoever, none, zip. And then he said, "And you're going to do a good job. But don't worry, I'm going to give you somebody that's going to help you. If you run out of something to say, then you'll ask this person a question, and they'll answer it, and it'll be entertaining." "Okay, Pop, whatever you say." So now I'm starting, and the person he gave me was Arnold Skolin, who was a wonderful, wonderful human being, but a man of few words.
Right.
And I would ask Arnold questions, and his answer would either be yep or nope. That was it. So after several weeks of that, I went back to my dad and said, "You know what, Pop, I'm doing the best I can out here, but you really need to give someone that can out here that's going to help me." You know, Patterson was one of them. There were a number of them that Anthony LaRocca was a riot because I had no idea what he was saying.
Right.
You know, but he did, I think. But it was just humorous and entertaining to listen to him. So there were a number of individuals that sat out there with me, and which I played ribs on and things of that nature. I mean, you have to have fun, again, making fun.
I want to ask you a yep or no question. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about CM Punk?
Only from a standpoint, or first thing, I would like to do this. I would like to apologize. Sometimes in a big corporation, the legal people don't necessarily know what talent relations are doing, and conversely. And Punk got his severance papers, moreover, on the day he got married. And that was coincidence. So I want to personally apologize for that. Other than that, the only thing I want to say about Punk is that there have been a number of individuals in the past who have been disgruntled, said a lot of things about the organization, and I'm not going to, you know, wash the dirty laundry in public. I don't think there's any reason for that. I think that there are a lot of things that he may say that he may regret one day in terms of looking back at it. But nonetheless, I hope that one day, you know, we'll be able to get back together again. You and I got back together again. We had our differences.
Right.
Hogan, oh my God, you know, we got back together again, you know, after differences. Ultimate Warrior, I mean, there's a long list of them. And in essence, what I try to do is to give the audience what they want. I try to give them what's best for business. And I know that's like we use that phrase on television now and so forth, but that's always been my philosophy. I take my ego, which is sizable, okay, and I'll put it over here and say, okay, now your ego's over here, Vince, and yada, 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 here's the way you really feel. So, but what is the best thing for business? So I'm hoping that one day we can get back together.
So you'd be open to working with Punk in the future?
Sure. I mean, again,
Did you listen to the interview that he did with Coco Cabana on Honor Wrestling?
No,
I did not. Good show for any sports entertainment fans out there.
No, I did not. You know, I understand that he used a lot of expletives and things of that nature, and I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speak for Punk. You know,
right.
He speaks for himself. I heard it was a number of things that he said that it's his point of view.
Right.
You know, and there's always two sides to every story.
Right. I mean, back in the day, and I don't want to put myself in Punk's shoes because he's in a very unique situation that he is in specifically.
Sure.
But back in the day, I was in a similar position. Not the same circumstances, but I was working my ass off. I was a little bit burned out. Didn't like some of the creative, but we were rock and rolling pretty good. And then I was wrestling Ric Flair in a cage in Columbus, Georgia. And Jim Ross called and gave me the creative for Monday Night Raw. And that's when I was going to do the favors for Brock Lesnar
right.
in a King of the Ring qualifier match. And with no build-up, no nothing. I mean, here's a guy, of course, as soon as Brock Lesnar walked into the WWE, you said, hey, man, this guy's a player. He right. had that look. He had that it. And he's a good friend of mine. But all of a sudden, I get the 411 that I'm supposed to do the favors that night and... Quite frankly, me to you, guys like me are pretty hard to find. You know that, right?
Sure.
So, and man,
pretty,
I felt...
pretty hard to build and work with, too.
Correct. How hard was that to work with?
You?
Yeah.
Oof. Wow. Sometimes you were so hard-headed, it was not to be believed. Because what you would do is, you would say, I don't like the creative.
And I used some expletives in there, and then, you know, and Triple H, you know, he told the whole story. He goes, Steve would just say, no, I'm not doing that. Well, do you have an answer or a substitute proposition?
Right.
No. So right. I was kind of a horse's ass, being real politically correct here. But
that's
you know,
not it. You weren't a horse's ass. You just didn't have an alternative. So then I started digging, and more times than not, we had come up with it. Because you had an idea in your head, you know, it's just that you couldn't explain.
What I couldn't figure out, and one of the reasons, well, not one of the reasons, but while we're talking about, you know, guys in similar situations, the Punk deal, myself, I was a little bit burned out running hard, but I would work my ass off, you know that.
Punk.
What's that?
So did Punk.
So did Punk. But I got that piece of booking, and I was like, hey, man, tell Vince if that's going to be a creative, I ain't going to be there. And so he calls you, and he says, hey, man, whatever you do, when you get through working Flair in that cage, call Vince. So I called you about 2 o'clock that morning. You broke down the storyline for me.
I answer the phone 24/7.
I know. You do. You did. These days when I call you, you won't answer. Back in. First ring. Vince on the line. Hey, so anyway, so I didn't show up. I no-showed.
Right.
And it was the worst decision ever made in my life, and I've admitted it. Professional decision I've ever made in my life, and I've owned up to that. And I tell you what, when I was watching, I watched last night our old DVD, Austin versus McMahon. If nobody's ever seen it, you can check it out on the WWE Network. It's badass. It's well put together. And it made me remember a lot of things that I don't remember.
What not the greatest athlete and the greatest performer you ever worked with?
Oh, man, your athleticism off the charts. But, you know, when I look back, I was gone from the company for about 8 months. Mm-hmm. And when I walked off, you called me 3 times and left 3 voice messages on my phone. Mm-hmm. But as hard-headed as I am, and I got this from my mother, once you piss me off, I mean, you know, I'm bad.
Yeah.
And so I never returned your phone calls. And finally, I get a card in the mail from Jim Ross. And he said, hey, man, if you ever want to talk, just give me a call. I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, it's just on a little paper card, and it meant so much to me. I called his ass on the phone and talked to him for two or three hours. And, you know, he finally, you know, he said to me, he said, hey, if I put you and Vince in the same room together, you know, you think you guys can get back on track?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, man, I'd love to do that. And so, anyway, you and I met in a high-rise hotel. It was Houston, Texas. And, man, it was about the 30th floor, and I was the first one in the room. And when I walked in, I was thinking, man, this is a hit. So something's going down because I was the first one in the room.
Down, right?
I was the only guy in the room, dude. And so anyway, here you come. And it was very uncomfortable. And it was very awkward. And we got everything settled, and I came back to work. And I credit that to Jim Ross. Jim Ross was an important part of my career, as he has been for the entire WWE.
Right.
Is there a guy like Jim that can bridge the gap between you and CM Punk?
Well, unfortunately, there wasn't. That's really, I think, moreover, the problem is the lack of communication. And I think I can legitimately say that, you know, Punk has some degree of lack of communication skills. He's pretty much a loner.
Me too.
Yeah, I know. And had there been a JR or someone like that to get us together, I think we could have worked things out.
Right.
But it didn't happen that way. And then anytime you get attorneys involved in something, it's like it's going to hell in a handbasket. You know, and I'm not too sure that's not what happened here. It's a lack of communication.
When I left the company, I was gone for 8 months. Didn't get a paycheck for 8 months. That hurt, but that was my own mistake. On top of that, after you and I had, had our come to Jesus meeting and we're cool, mm-hmm. and we'll get back in business together, you said, well, Steve, I think it's only right I should fine you. And I said, well, all right, how much you going to fine me? And you said, you remember this? You said $650,000. And I said, huh, dang. I said, 650, geez, a lot of money, right?
Right.
And you said, Steve, I feel like I've got to slap your wrist. I said, slap my wrist? You're chopping my damn hand off.
Right.
And you said, well, what do you think it should be then? Well, this is my job skills as a negotiator. I said, how about 250? Right. You thought about it for a second? Well, okay then, Steve. $250,000. So you fine me $250,000. No one's ever, I never tell that story out in public, but you fine me $250,000. Geez, you wanted to fine me $650,000.
Right.
Had I said $125,000, would you have said, hey, Steve, that's cool?
I can't tell you now.
I'm just kidding.
I think that when you walk out,
right,
no matter what the reason, then you're walking out on not just the company, you're walking out on the audience as well. And you have to do something. You have to try to do something. You know, to make sure that doesn't happen again, because
right.
otherwise, you know, someone doesn't like a creative or whatever it is, and, you know, they don't like their spot, you know, whether it's WrestleMania or any other, you know, situation, and you have problems. So, I mean, you try and do something to, you know, so that otherwise the inmates will be running the asylum, so to speak.
It's a penalty.
Yeah.
It's a penalty.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to share that just because, you know, all the guys, you know, when I talked to, when I came back, you know, I was gone for a long time. And I talked to a lot of the top guys and said, hey, man, you know, I was wound up tight, bad decision. And, you know, I was running pretty hard, pretty fast back in the day. And, you know, I let the guys down. And, you know, a lot of guys, you know, you have to put yourself in the shoes of someone to appreciate a situation sometime. So that's where I was at. But I wanted to make sure the boys knew that I did actually pay a price other than taking an 8-month vacation, zero pay, and was making pretty good money back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But you find my ass, too.
Yeah, you deserved it.
I did.
No, but I think also one of the things, though, that you, I think one of the things, Steve, you did was have communication skills, certainly not so much with me all the time.
Right.
But with the rest of the talent. You owned up to who you were, you know, you got along with everybody, most everybody.
Right.
And because just from a business standpoint, you have to have someone to work with. It's dancing. We have to have two people doing
right.
the dance. So I think that, you know, that you're a little bit different that way than Punk, because again, I think he's a loner, and that's fine. So are you, and sometimes I am as well. Sometimes, actually, I'm a very introverted and shy. Wonderful human being.
Well, if I could say the word that goes with BS, I would.
I know you would.
You introverted and shy?
Yeah.
When?
No, you're not going to see it here.
No.
You're not going to see it in front of 10,000 people. That's easy to do.
Right.
Put me in a room of 6 or 7 people or, like, a, quote, party of some kind, and I'm very, very uncomfortable. You know, my wife was running for office as a senator, potentially, in Connecticut, and I went to a couple of those things, and like, oh, man, you'd find me over, you know, kibitzing with a bartender.
Right.
Those are my people.
Right.
You know, and not the political hoi polloi kind of stuff. So I don't have a lot in common with, you know, with those kind of people, really. And I am shy. You say to yourself, this is complete bull. But, you know, when I'm around a small group of people, I don't really want to be there, you know.
Right.
So I'd rather be invisible.
Right.
That's not going to happen, but yeah, you know, I mean, call it whatever you will. I call it shy or whatever, but it's maybe there's another word for it.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. And Geico would just like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's Geico's turn to share too with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. And because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
All right, we're going to get back to my interview with WWE's Vince McMahon right now.
One of the guys that, when I was making my rounds, when I came back and apologized to, was The Undertaker. Been around a long time. He was a guy, stand-up guy, leader of the locker room, and had a hellacious run. And I remember being down in New Orleans, there at number 30, and I was watching a match in the truck with Kevin Dunn, and beer in each hand, and this was a match that I had to watch. Got two badass competitors in the ring, and Brock Lesnar and Undertaker, and I had to see the finish. All of a sudden, man, I'm watching that referee hits a three count after that third F5, whatever it's called, and I couldn't believe my eyes. I was like that guy in the front row. His eyes got this big. That guy in the truck.
Right.
I said, holy smokes, what just happened?
Right.
How, when, and why was the decision made to end the streak?
Well, no one wants to give back to the business more than The Undertaker, more than Mark Calloway. And he knew it's important to give back to the business. There comes a time in which it's time to do that. So why not then, when you consider, okay, who else was looking down the line, when you look at the talent roster, who else possibly could Undertaker work with, and at that time give back in the biggest possible way he could to help someone be a star? When you look at that talent roster, you know, who was it going to be? There was no one on the roster, potentially. You know, in the following year, or the year after that, it was timing. And the one person whose time was there at that moment, who Mark thought, okay, this is it, had to be Brock.
Come on, dude. You can't tell me Undertaker made that decision.
I made that decision.
Okay, you made the decision.
Absolutely.
Okay, I thought you were saying he was serving himself up.
No.
You're giving a story about, okay, guy's been around a long time. He's
and
finally
no one wants
back.
To give back more than the Undertaker.
No.
I think you'd agree with that. He's one of the most unselfish people in the ring.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, okay.
But that had to come to a shocker as him.
I think it did. You know, I think there's no question. It was a shock to everybody. That's on me. You know, those are decisions.
I'm not saying it was wrong.
No. Those decisions, you know, aren't easy to make, you know. But you have to make difficult decisions sometimes. You know, that's my job to do that. And I think I made the right call at the right time. Coming into this year's WrestleMania, I don't think Brock Lesnar could be any hotter than he will be, reminding everyone of what happened of Brock Lesnar breaking the Undertaker streak. So to me, it was the right call.
Okay, you've got Brock Lesnar, badass dude, big cat, very physical, great success here. Tries to play a little pro football, goes to UFC, has success there, comes back to the WWE, success. He's a world champ. He's not around.
Right.
Where is he? Can we not have him on television more than we have him on?
I don't think you want him on television.
Why not?
More than you have him. Well, because he's a special attraction.
He is.
You know, when you see Brock Lesnar, you know, it's almost like when, if you recall, Jake the Snake Roberts, when he first came into the ring and he brought this big python. Oh, my God, that was like give you the willies just watching on television. But he did it week after week. No fault of Jake's, because he was booked on television. After a while, it's like Jake wasn't special anymore, because he bring out the snake and you know, become jaded as human beings and what have you. So Brock, per the contract we made with him, you know, only allows us X number of dates. So to me, it's not about the title. It's not about the title that draws people into the arena. It's about the performer and about, you know, his opponent and about the story, you know, and how they're going to resolve that story. So it's not really about the title and only, you know, that's, you know, I mean, does it help sometimes? Sure it does, but it's not just about the title. Mm. And if you see a lot of Brock, you're going to see a lot of the same thing. How many people can he beat up? If he beats up half of the, you know, babyface roster, who's left?
Right.
You know, And it can't be just one match, you know, at WrestleMania. It's got to be a whole bunch of matches at WrestleMania. Sometimes, you and Rock, things of that nature, that was the main event at WrestleMania. More often than not, there's more than one. So, you know, you can't just rely on one match these days. You know, the business has changed, and you have to have, you know, appeal to different segments of the audience as to what draws.
Right. Are we ever going to see Macho Man Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
In the near future? 10 years from now? Is there any kind of timeline on this?
No, I'd say soon. I'm not so sure if it's this year, but it'd be soon.
So that's a yes?
That's a yes. Well, you think I'm not? Of course it's a yes. Why are you looking at me that way?
Because I'm just... He's going in, right?
Yes, he's going in.
All right. Sting. Talk about Sting for a while. Mm-hmm. He spent so long down there in WCW. And we were at battle with those guys back in the Monday Night Wars, which I want to get to. His role here in WWE, what's it going to be?
I think that, well, he made a hell of an impression when we did his first time in.
Great piece of business between him and Triple H. Loved it.
I think it was. His character is one in which you don't need to see a lot of because, you know, you become accustomed to it again. I think you will see some of, you know, Sting, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't show up at WrestleMania.
Gotcha. You know, you keep saying these guys, you can't see them too much. Man, I was out there forever,
I know
ever,
you
never.
Were, right.
So is it because of contracts or is it because...
No. It's both. It's right. Because of contracts and it's also... Look, we did everything imaginable with you. You know, it's like, you know, every week it was something else.
And, don't get me wrong. Monday Night Raw was my therapy.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And I was involved, had the privilege of being involved in a lot of that. You know, but it's a different time now. You know, and again, it's you have to roll with the punches and you have to change with the times. You know, and we're doing that.
Talk about the Monday Night Wars for a while, man. There's a lot of my career that I forgot. Hitting the head with steel chairs, drinking whiskey, beer, driving down the road, taking flat back bumps. I had the best time in the world. But when we got into Monday Night Wars, man, I mean, it was everything but the kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. It was hardcore competition.
Right.
You always tell me the story, or you tell the story on occasion of that one time when you got the phone call from Ted Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Vince, I'm in the wrestling business. And your answer was?
Ted, we're not in the same business because I'm in the sports entertainment business.
So anyway, we go to battle. Mm-hmm. Bischoff starts running that show over there, mm-hmm. and we're going head-to-head, and it's hot and heavy. Finally, after about 2 years, we win. But ultimately, you put Ted Turner out of business. Was it our mission to put them guys out of business or just win the Monday Night Wars?
No, Ted and I have a different business philosophy. Ted Turner's business philosophy, moreover, was let's go hurt, you know, my competition. My business philosophy is much different than that. You know, my business philosophy is let's help us. So let's help us have, that's the way we're going to compete. We're going to have a much better product. And I thought we had a much better product. Anyhow, despite all those guys going down there, I thought we had a much better product. It was something new with Hogan and Scott Hall, those guys going down there, and it was new. It was, and I got it, NWO and things of that nature. To me, it was just a matter of time if we could stay with them, you know, before we beat them, because we had a better product. We had more passion than they did. You know, anytime you have talent involved and from the standpoint of controlling their own creative, oh man, you need someone to be able to sit back and help that talent develop, you know, and be able to say yes, no. It can't be a talent saying I'm not going to do this or I'm not going to do that. You have anarchy then. It's no different than running any kind of business. As an executive, you all have to toe the line, because any other executive says, well, I'm not going to do that, you're what? You know, so it's things like that. You know, I mean, again, and I still to this day, it's like I want to make the best product we possibly can. Sometimes we hit, sometimes we miss.
But at the end of the day, we weren't trying to put them out of business.
No, we weren't trying to
put
them out of business.
But then we did, and then you bought the company for whatever it was on the dollar.
Right.
Now, did you shoot yourself in the foot by doing that? Because now you don't have anybody to compete against.
No.
And all due respect to TNA.
Yeah.
We're talking about real deal straight up.
I get that. But see, we compete with everything that's on television. Think about that. You know, we're holding our own, you know, with Monday Night Raw, with SmackDown.
But within specifically sports entertainment, squared circle,
right.
Wrestling.
Okay. from a sports entertainment standpoint, Steve, here's the situation. We were going so hot and so heavy, and they were too. Who was going to burn out the quickest?
Right.
Always kept something in the back pocket. Always. You know, you can't just let, here it is. And that's right. What they did. Here it is. They ran out of ideas. They ran out of the creative elements. You know, you had the inmates running the asylum. It was chaos. They didn't have the dedication. Didn't want to make that trip every Monday or Tuesday. Mm-mm. They didn't want to do that. It wore them down. I give up. That's what happened.
When you bought the business from your father,
right.
You had a global vision of domination.
Not domination. I had a global vision.
A global vision.
Right.
Domination.
It's
coming from
domination.
This chair. Anyway, you went out to everybody's territories, mm-hmm. which was something no one did back then. I mean, every now and then, but, you know, someone usually put a firm foot down and stop that.
Right.
You were able to do that. You put every damn territory out of business.
Well, hang on a second. It's almost like Brett screwed Brett. I didn't put them out of business. They put themselves out of business.
How did they put themselves out of business?
Let me explain this, okay?
Okay.
So I went to Vern Gagne, you know, and wanted to talk to Vern about buying them out. Well, Vern thought I couldn't do it, wouldn't do it, laughed at me. How dare this kid at the time, although I would change it all, I'm sure. But nonetheless, how could this kid at one time buy me out? It's an insult, but yet he listened to me.
Right.
You know, didn't go anywhere. I was willing to write a check if I could, you know, and it would have to be like I bought my dad's business. It would have to be a dollar down and that sort of stuff, you know, all the way through what they call a balloon payment at the end.
Right.
Because I didn't have the money. That was the thing about it. It's like all I had, you know, was creative skills, a really strong work ethic, a lot of luck, and a set of grapefruits.
Right.
Because when you go up against Vern Gagne, you know, Vern Gagne was a multimillionaire. I had nothing at the time except just that. And a lot of these other guys, the guys in Kansas City, you know, I mean, they all had money stashed away, but they didn't put it in the business. You know, I think Harley would say that, you know, having a bit of Kansas City is like, come on, their television show was a ring that probably hadn't been swept out in, you know, in God knows how long, you know, in a small little area, in a studio or whatever, and that was their product. Well, what I did, was I kept reinvesting in the product, reinvesting in greater production, you know, Saturday night's main event on NBC, things of that nature, with Dick Ebersol helping me, and later on Bonnie Hammer, you know, helped me as well from an NBCU a USA standpoint. Many from the outside, you got to look from the outside, bring them in, you know, and try and help you grow. To this day, we're constantly investing, you know, in our business, and you have to invest in your business. Otherwise, it won't grow.
But without any competition, I mean, how do you compete with yourself just to make the in-ring product better? Can you build all these stars down there in Florida at FCW?
Oh, my God, I think we definitely are. You know, and again, when you look at, as you mentioned before, you got Bray, you know. You've got
NXT.
Yeah.
NXT, I'm sorry. Okay, but when I look at the in-ring,
that's the only source we have, by the way.
Right.
You got all, you know, used to have the territorial system, which, you know, okay, you're saying I put them all out of business. You know, they put themselves out of business, generally speaking, because they all had vast resources, far greater than mine. They just went like, oop, I've got my money. I'm not going to compete. Except one guy, Bill Watts. Bill Watts in Oklahoma and all that kind of stuff, where we are today. It's like the first time we ran against Bill Watts, you know, loaded up the show and so forth. And Bill in his infinite wisdom, because Bill was a street smart guy.
Right.
You know, much like myself, but he's real street smart. So we had a first live event. What we did, Bill, in the parking lot, I think it was, next door, had this huge free, you know, come see the boys work, come sign autographs, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was like, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't want to compete with Bill. That's the only time we did. You know, Bill subsequently sold out to Jim Crockett. I said, aha, I know where I'm going now. Crockett wasn't the brightest branch in the tree, you know, so, I didn't think really understood the business. So, nonetheless, that then was okay. But competing with Bill Watts and, you know, and all those other guys could have competed that way, but they didn't. They just gave up the ship.
Right.
So, you can say I put them out of business or whatever it is, and it's fine with me if you have that point of view. You know, I really don't care, as you know. Nonetheless, it is what it is. But to answer your question, going back to it, it's like, there's no woman out there in sports entertainment you're going to compete with, so therefore, eventually, you're laying on your lazy ass. No, that's not the case, because everything we do on television, when you think about the number of channels now and social media and things of that nature, last year, cable was down 10% across the board.
Right.
In terms of viewership. Why? It's not because people are spending less time in front of the television set. You know, because that's not the case. It's just, right now, it's just that there's subscription television. There's all kinds of things. You just hook up to the internet. My God, you got any number of things. So at the same time, we're holding our own. Our competition is anything on television. Our competition is anything at a live event, whether it's Disney or a concert or whatever it is. That is tough competition.
When you're talking about Bill Watts, you've referred to him being a pretty cagey guy. One of the greatest minds in the business, in my opinion, is Jim Ross, who came from the Bill Watts tree and spent his whole life in the business and is no longer with WWE. Is there a heat between you guys?
There's no heat from my standpoint. You know, I think that you know, there was an incident in Los Angeles, which you were a part of, and you, as a matter of fact, stated your opinion as part of that situation. And, you know, I'd rather not go into it.
Yeah.
Okay. But nonetheless, I think that, you know, it was like, oh, man, you just don't do that. It was very unprofessional and very unlike Jim. Jim and I worked very well together. You know, I like Jim as a human being. He has a lot of institutional knowledge, and I'm not so sure we won't get back together, too.
We talk on the phone all the time, and we break down the product in the ring and what you guys are doing, and we book the territory.
Good. Give me some ideas.
Well, I know that's my point. Jim's one of the brightest guys I've ever heard, whether it's, you know, a guy who's going to be a devil's advocate, bounce something off, just basic logic, common sense when it comes to the business of sports entertainment. You know, there's been great Finnish guys, you know, Eddie Graham down here in Florida, Pat Patterson is phenomenal, but just all-around knowledge of the business, you really can't get anyone with more depth of knowledge than yourself or Jim Ross. I don't know that that human being is walking the planet.
I don't know either. And again, it's all about growth as well. And what Jim wanted to do, and you know, and I helped him get there. His desire was to leave Connecticut, Connecticut, and go back to Oklahoma. And that's what Jim wanted to do. Well, Jim really paid his dues with me. And as you know, anyone who works with me, I'd never ask anyone to do anything in the ring I wouldn't do.
Right.
Or anything, you know, in the office I wouldn't do. And you know that is a fact.
Right.
So JR really, really worked hard. And as everyone does, and contributed greatly, JR decided his own volition, not me. I want to go back to Oklahoma, Vince. You know, I want to take it easy. You know, I want to help some. You know, but that's what I want to do. I don't want to do what I'm doing now. And it takes 24/7, 7 days a week, to be able to put this product together. You can't do it on a half-assed kind of way. You can't do that. You've got to be all in on this. And when Stone Cold calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to answer the phone.
Right.
So, you know, in addition to all of that, you think, consider all the vast, you know, aspects of our company now as a public company in so many places, so many different businesses that we're in and what have you. It's a big magilla. You know, and JR contributed greatly, as did you, as did so many other performers, you know, before all you guys.
Right.
And so many other executives before JR. But I, when someone says, burn me out, Vince, you know, I want to go over here.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Support for the Steve Austin Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home today is so much more than it was yesterday. But at Rocket Mortgage, home is still all about you. During these challenging times, the top priority at Rocket Mortgage is the health and safety of the communities they serve. If you need mortgage assistance, their team is available 24/7 to answer questions and offer solutions. Whether that means saving money on your mortgage or finding a new way to navigate payments, from their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Visit rocketmortgage.com/Austin to learn more. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030 today. Let's get back to my sit-down with Vince McMahon.
I want to talk about you and me in the ring together.
Right.
We were magic. We were made for each other. You said basically that the Stone Cold character was the Vince McMahon character.
Right.
There, and I've said this before, as much as I loved working with The Rock, Bret Hart, The Undertaker, some of the best guys in the business, no one has ever reflected back at me what you did as an opponent. You know, heel, babyface, whatever, wherever I was, I got no one greater than you that did that. What in the hell was it, in your opinion, why our chemistry was what it was. Because it was, people always say, oh yeah, he got to kick the hell out of his boss. Everybody wants to beat up their boss. It's a little bit more than that.
Right.
You could put anybody in my shoes to do the things that I
no,
did.
No, that's not true.
They could have put anybody in your shoes, but they wouldn't have had that right. same magic.
Right.
Why were we so similar, or why did we work so well together? Because you've had great feuds with everybody else too, but you and me is a whole different story.
Right. Well, I understood. You know, I mean, you know, you're sort of a self-professed redneck to a certain extent, and no one thinks of me that way, and I don't look at it necessarily as a derogatory term, my background is one of that's different than the way I look, you know, manicure, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, I grew up in 8-foot-wide trailer park, a trailer in a trailer park. And things were, you know, different, you know, but that's, I understand the common man, because that's really who I am. It's like, oh my God, put on the bull. That's, you know, but that's, you know, you never change who you really are. You can
right.
put a suit on and all that kind of stuff and have some money in the bank and whatever. You know, well, I guess some people do change and put money in the bank, but I'm still the same guy. And that's the way I think. And I think that's an advantage in our company, because our audience is Americana. Our audience is the common man. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. You know, we have as many white-collar people watching us as there are percentages in the United States. You have a number of blue collars, number of minorities. You know, so we have a vast audience. When you think about our audience, you know, it's like in quadrants. You start out with kids, 2 to 11, and you go all the way to, believe it or not, even people my age, you know, who watch our product. It's a huge, vast audience. And it's not one size fits all. You've got to have a little bit of this for that person, a little bit of this for that demographic. You know, certainly, I would hope that tonight, yes, I'm getting back there with you and me. I'm going back.
All right.
So then you have to have something there, but you have to have a degree of common sense and understand the way psychologically people think. And when someone would, as a kid, even growing up, you know, pretend that they were better than me, oh my God, wow, that made me angry. And the old thing of like, they've got, quote, money, or so-and-so's got money. Ugh, man. Because I knew, you know, who I was. And I, to this day, know better than anyone else in the world, but no one's better than me. And that was my philosophy. So I understood the psychology of all of this. And I'm, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin's character. That's really who I am on the inside.
Right.
Understanding the psychology, so it was pretty easy for me, you know, to do the reversal, okay, then I'm going to be the guy, you know, that I despised when I was growing up. That's who I'm going to be, you know, and I'll know how to throw things around, you know. I'll know how to, you know, try to keep people down. I've got more money than you, you know, I've got more influence than you. You're a piece of crap, you know, I mean, things like that. So a lot of that I understood. Understood, you know, because of my childhood as well. It's just, you know, really, really screwed up. But I learned from it. And, you know, and it's what it was. And that's part of who I am today. You know, so it's not just, you know, a guy in a suit, you know, and, you know, in a nice plane and that sort of stuff, you know, and things that play, by the way, we do a lot of work.
You got 1 minute.
And I got 1 minute.
Yep.
We're just getting started.
We're just getting started. We got one more minute on the WWE Network.
Okay. I've enjoyed it, as I have always enjoyed, you know, working with you. And I look forward to the next time. How's that?
Well, I want to stay a little bit longer after we go off the air, because I want this answer for my podcast.
Right.
Because you and me were money together. And
yeah,
it was about love and hate. And it's one thing to just go out and do something. It's like someone playing a song. You can hear that song, but if you hearing a song is one thing, but if you feel that song, it's a whole different ball game.
They're
wrapping me up with 20 seconds.
No, well, okay, since I happen to own the network.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're going to go on for another 15 minutes, whoever's got that. Okay, so.
15, go.
All right, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there was an incredible amount of magic, you know, and your working punch is brutal. And
you were the most uncoordinated bastard I ever threw in the damn ropes. And when you threw me into that cage at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, I mean, it was brutal because you're supposed to kind of let a guy get a heads up and know where he's going, and you just slung me into the ring with full force. Discombobulation, uncoordination, you personified. I remember the first time I rang your ass up with the stunner. Was it the garden?
Oh, my God.
And I almost lost you, but I recouped, and then I went ahead and dropped you, rang you up, and we was off to the money in the races. But
I took the worst stunner of anyone and never took it the same way twice.
I know, and the thing about it was, with your uncoordination, what? And the fact that I was wearing those... No, listen, what? Work with me. I'm fixing to put you back over.
All right, okay.
With your uncoordination, and I was wearing those damn jeans that were too damn tight, sometimes I couldn't pick my leg up high enough, so I kicked you in the balls, damn near every single time I gave it a stutter. It was like an ongoing rip.
It was.
But, I mean, I wasn't shooting.
For you.
Yeah. I was trying to kick you in the gut. I couldn't pick my leg up high enough.
Oof. Man. You got me in the shins one time. You got me in the colognes. You know, it was everywhere, but that's okay. I didn't care because that was magic and because we were entertaining the audience. At that time, I felt better or just as good as anyone had ever entertained the audience. When to go out there and to feel that kind of magic is, it there's no way that I'm eloquent enough to describe what that feeling is. And there's no feeling like
it. I mean, I tell people that all the time. Right. And once you get in that ring, whether it's a crowd of 50 or 60, 80,000, like a WrestleMania, right. Once you rock that house and you get that feeling in your blood, I mean, it's damn near like, something that you shoot in your veins. Because right. Yep. It's that addictive. And that's what it was when you and I stepped into the ring. And it was from Jump Street, from the start to the finish.
Right.
Now, you always wanted to be a pro wrestler. You always wanted to be a sports entertainer, correct?
Right.
And it's going back 60 years before that term was invented.
60 years. Actually, at the time, I wanted to be a pro wrestler, yes.
You always wanted to be a WWE superstar. How about that?
I'll correct myself.
But your father wouldn't let you into business.
Nope.
Okay, and then you got the announce job, which I love your announce. Sometimes you was over the top. You always knew where you're going because you owned the company on the down low. You kept that under wraps for a long time.
Eventually I did, yeah.
Right. But you always knew. I love your announcing. And sometimes you could go off the rails with a little bit of hokiness.
Sure.
With all due respect. God dang, I love you. But, you know, we're sitting here talking to each other. But when you finally got to get in the ring with me, Stone Cold Steve Austin, was that when, I mean, because you're in front of a crowd, you always want to be a superstar.
Yep.
Now you are.
Right.
How was it? I mean, talk about your mindset once you got into the ring, because all the years you spent in the business, right. Seeing the best ever and working, you know, with your dad, a right. great promoter, guy you looked up to, and, you know, you came to know him later on in your life.
Right. I came later on because, you know, my dad said, look, I never want you to be a wrestler because you can't do both. You can't be a businessman and also be a wrestler. You know, so I want you to be a businessman.
Right.
And if that were his real reason, I don't know, but that's what he said, and
right. Okay,
it makes some sense. Later on, I was the businessman, not that I had accomplished all of that and then, you know, and didn't have to continue to be
right. That.
It was just that there was an opportunity there, you know, and it was like, man, this is like, it's always been my dream to be in the ring,
right. You
know, as a performer, and I have that opportunity, and I'm so happy that I took it because it was one of the greatest thrills of my life.
Man, when I walked down the ring, you know, finally when you guys started getting me over Stone Cold, and I came in as a ringmaster, and I'd talked to you. I'd went to your house twice to meet with you, and I knew in your head you didn't know what the hell to do with me. I could be a mechanic for you, and that was it.
A great mechanic, but yeah.
And then, you know, you came up, and you one time you called me and pitched me the ringmaster idea. It sounded like $1 million, you know, because I was, you know, working one night a week in Philly with Paul Lee. God bless him. And, you know, he really helped me out.
Sure.
Thank you, Paul. But anyway, so I know I never had any, you know, you didn't see a superstar in me. And going back to the locker room and challenging this damn locker room to step up, go out on a limb, and be creative and push the envelope.
Right.
Because you need superstars. You need guys that are over. But back to you and me. And finally, you know, when it comes to the Stone Cold thing, and I started, you know, really ramping up and really getting over and getting the response that I was getting, man, I always loved to work heel. You know, but I had massive success as a baby.
Right.
And, you know, we did the double turn at WrestleMania 13.
Right.
But what was it like for you finally, because you had tremendous heat? And when you get the kind of response that you generate from that crowd, what was that like for you?
I mean,
because it was almost, it's a thrill. Let's put it that way. I know we got a PG audience right now, but I mean, it's a thrill.
Yeah, it really is. And again, understanding psychology.
Right.
Understanding what to say, when to say it, because especially using the truth. People don't like it when you use the truth and use it against them. And having that degree of psychology and what have you, and the ability to, to portray this character, because understanding who I never wanted to be, it was to be in the ring, but, it was just, it was beyond a thrill. It was like everything that I, from Hogan and all those, stars that preceded Bruno, all those guys, it was like, man, I really want to be in there so badly. So when I had the opportunity, it was, I use the trite expression, a dream come true. It was a dream come true.
It's like a deal. I mean, you always get a kick out of your response, your pop. Whether you're working heel or baby.
Right.
Then also you're living, vicariously through that other guy you're working against, right. Their pop, and you're gauging that, and you're like, okay, man, it wasn't as good as on either part. Oh, wasn't what I wanted it to be. Right. Wasn't what I envisioned. But when you both get that double monster pop, it's like, hey, man, we're off to the races. You and me were in Memphis, Tennessee at the Pyramid. It was, God dang, what was the name of that pay-per-view? You took the bump off the cage. St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
It was a massacre.
And, you got the big idea. You want to take this bump off that cage and land on that damn table. And you hit, and your head whipped down, and you hit that damn desk. And did you hurt your neck? Did you get knocked out? Where were you? On a chute.
The table didn't go down. Right. If you look at it in slow motion, I came down, I hit the edge of the table. And then came back up.
The worst place to hit it.
Yeah.
Didn't hit the sweet spot.
Right. It hit the sweet spot, all right. It was moreover, I had, which, you can laugh at it now, but I could have bled out internally. But I had, it would come down from the small of my back, I had the biggest bruise you've ever seen over both cheeks, and it would come underneath all the way to the back of my knee. It was like, when you look at it now, it's like, oh my God, the amount of blood that, that went into that. It was
right.
Like, ooh, but at the same time, I wouldn't trade that either.
Was the bump, you wanted to get the crowd everything you could.
Right.
And basically, it was a guy who could work, wrestle. Right. And I kind of changed my style to a brawler at that point. And we told a story that needed to be told
right.
Without doing, a whole lot of, wrestling inside the ring.
Right.
Speaking about bleeding. I got busted open, WrestleMania 13, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Quick story. We walked into your office, and, that night, because of what the crowd was doing, mm-hmm. Stone Cold was getting a better pop than a lot of the babyface he was working with.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Pillman, God rest his soul, used to tell me all the time, he goes, God dang it, kid, you're a babyface. And I would say, F you, I'm a heel, because I took, being a heel very seriously. And, so the pops were building. You saw the writing on the wall. Bret had been around for a long time. He's one of my favorites of all time. And, he was starting to get a little long-winded and pissy-moany, and so you saw the double turn there. So we went to execute. In 13, we went to your office, and you said, hey, man, here's how it's going to go down. There was only three men in the room. Steve, you guys are going to have a hell of a match. At the end of the day, at the end of the match, you're going to pass out and sharpshooter. End of story. I said, well, I'd only been in a company, give or take a year and some. I didn't have a whole lot of stroke. I just come off being a ringmaster. We gained some right. momentum, and then we did this thing. And so I said, all right, man, that's cool. Bret was cool with it because he's going over. And so we walk out, and we're in the semi-main. Undertaker and Sid are in the main.
Mm-hmm.
And, I found out about the match sitting on my house, and in my house in San Antonio. I had a submission match, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Bret the Hitman Hart. I thought we were going to stink the joint out because I'm not a submission wrestler. We walked in the ring, and Bret says to me, hey, Steve, and he was looking out for me. If we're going to do the finish like this, I think you need to be bleeding. And I said, all right, man. And I said, I don't know about that. And he wrote about this in his book. And he goes, I didn't have the stroke. And he said, if you want me to get it for you, I will. And I said, all right, man. I walked back into your office, and I double-checked with you. I was cool with going out like that. But I said, Vince, are you sure this is the right way to go about this match? And you said, oh, God dang, Steve, I'm telling you, it'll work. And Chicago was my town. I mean, and they really took into the Stone Cold thing. To this day, Chicago is a strong town for me. Rosemount Horizon, that building, way that thing, the acoustics, it was just conducive to having a great match. And so all of a sudden, out the ring we go, and we had that crowd hook, line, and sinker, and all of a sudden, Stone Cold bangs his head on a guardrail. I come up bleeding like a stuck pig, working through the rest of that match. You, Jim Ross, and Jerry Lawler are calling that action. Brett delivers a punch to me, and I throw my head over here, and I spray blood all over Lawler's paperwork. He's still got the paperwork to this day from that match. What were you thinking with a no-color policy, and all of a sudden you got two guys out there, and Stone Cold is bleeding his ass off? Are you madder than a hornet? Because, what were you? Because in your commentary you say, oh, it's unfortunate. Things like this don't happen very often.
I guess maybe, you know, looking back on it, we all have a tendency to rewrite history. But I'm sure I was a little pissed off. And at the same time, it's not about what I want, ever. It's about what the audience wants. So I'm a pretty good listener, as I said before. And when you're listening to the audience and they're going crazy, you know, because of this finish and because of what's happening now, and you've got color and so forth, it's like, man, you know, well, it's like, okay, it's against policy, but listen to the audience. Look what's going on here. You know, so I'm a pretty good listener. So I think that, you know, from a personal standpoint, you know, a company standpoint, I was a bit pissed off because you break the rules. On the other hand, it's what the audience wanted. You gave them what they wanted.
All right, I got 4 minutes to wrap this up. I appreciate you giving me a little extra time. I want to go back to the WWE superstars. I want to go back to the WWE universe. Are you listening? Are you tuned in? Are you really giving them what they want? How can they let you know? I mean, there's no competition. We're not throwing everything but the kitchen sink at them every single Monday night like we were back in the day.
Nope.
God dang. And the people who won were the people at home every Monday night because they were getting some badass stuff.
Right.
So,
we have control of our own destiny.
Right. So, what's the future for WWE?
I think the future is good. You know, I think when you look at television ratings, you know, they're not what they were when we were competing with WCW, but we're more than holding our own. You know, we're holding up strong for television ratings. So, you know, can it get better? I think it can get better.
Has the action transitioned more to, you know, back and forth rather than a straight-up formula, kind of like a babyface shine, heel heat, a couple of hope spots, come back, and then a finish?
Right.
Now it's more segmented. Is that because, you know, the world has turned into short attention span theater? Because that's what it seems to me when I watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's no question about that. You know, again, it's like from, you know, we don't have conversations anymore. We text, you know. Or tweet or whatever the case may be, you know. So it is that, you know. It's a lot of other factors that go into it, but at the same time, I think that, you know, you have a short attention span. Nonetheless, you've got to reach the audience, and when you're out there for 3 hours, you know, you can't reach them all the time. People tune in, they tune out, no matter what it is. We're going back to football, going back to whatever it may be, you know. But nonetheless, they're enjoying the product. Can it get better? That's what I always want to do, is make it, you know, make it better. Am I out of touch? No. Am I 69 years old? Yes. Can I take you to the gym and kick your butt?
Probably. I want to ask you one final question. But people can send me feedback by sending stuff to questions at steveaustinshow.com.
Right.
How can they voice what they want to see as far as WWE programming to WWE?
Be a member of the audience, man. I listen to the audience.
You what?
I listen to the audience.
I
don't listen to critics.
No, I'm asking about a critic, but just people that can send in their voice to the WWE universe.
Right.
Is there an email?
Social media. We
okay, you know, at WWE on Twitter. Send in your feedback of what you want to see. So, and at Vince McMahon on Twitter. So they can send you the feedback and you can get what the people want. Now, last question. When are you going to ride off into the sunset? I got 60 seconds?
I got
60 seconds.
Right.
I always ask you every time I see you,
right,
when are you going to give this thing up?
Right. I work as many hours now as I always have. I'm enjoying the business now more than I've always had, and I've always enjoyed it. I'm healthy, knock on whatever, and I think I haven't lost a step. Physically, I have it. Mentally, I don't think I have. Some people think I'm out of touch, but most people who say that, you know, are critics and things of that nature.
Right.
You know, and again, I listen to the audience, and it's important to listen to the audience. It's important to give them what they want, but how do you know what they want? You've got to try a number of things. You know,
right.
I think with NXT, some of the guys that come up from there, they're getting great reactions. Okay? It's going to take them a while, you know, and maybe somewhere down the line, maybe another Stone Cold. And if there is, we're good to go.
You can catch your money at the bank.
That's it.
Hey, man, that's going to wrap up our conversation.
All right.
You know, I could do this with you any day of the week, and this was kind of, had a couple little notes written down here, but, man, there's so many things that you and I can talk about. It's just unbelievable. But this was a start. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to do this again.
Am I the most charismatic individual you've had on your show yet?
And a good-looking dude on top of that.
There you go.
I'm Steve Austin. This is Vince McMahon.
And I'm Vince McMahon.
The chairman and CEO of WWE. And it's been a blast talking to him on the WWE Network and the Steve Austin Show podcast. Vince.
Thank you, Steve.
You're the best.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, just want to say thanks to Vince McMahon and WWE for hauling my ass up there with Ted Fowler to Tulsa, Oklahoma, sit down and have a conversation with the boss, Vince McMahon. It's getting late. The sun's going down. The feeders have gone off. I'm going to grab my rifle, go get in a deer stand. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Hey, 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 this is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have. It's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.